Hi, it's I guess Monday night. Still in pain from this stuff, so I can't think so clearly. But I came across something rather cute, and I'll do this L'chaim Mishpacha Stefanski. I think they'll appreciate it. This is really just something that can I'll tell you exactly. I mean, like I said, I had a procedure today, and this, that, and the other, and the house is being turned over for Pesach, and my wife is throwing 100 books here and 100 books there, you know, out of nowhere, and I see some things I forgot existed, and one of them was this little book I got years ago from 1918, the translation of Moses Hess's Rome and Jerusalem. Probably own there. Moses Hess was a friend of Karl Marx. Matter of fact, they're the beginners of the socialism, and he was this Jewish guy, without going through the whole biography, who came from family, broke away from it all, married if somebody's not Jewish, lived up his life working for the socialistic emancipation, I'm serious, the socialistic emancipation of mankind, and for communism. He's from the Avi Avos of communism. But as time went by, he changed his mind, and although he didn't give up on communism, he said, instead of the Marxist way in which the Jews have to give up their identity, so does everybody else, into one big mishmash called human race. Every human race, every group should cultivate its own garden. And the Jews are part of that. And although he wasn't able to mamish become a Baal Tshuva in the sense of being a Shomer Torah Mitzvah, he never did get rid of his wife. He couldn't come back. But you see, he wanted to. It's very interesting. At the age of 50, he had like a rediscovery of his Jewish background. And he says, you know, what can I do? I love my people. Now, the interesting thing is, the way he describes it, he wrote a famous book called Rome and Jerusalem, in German. Here you have the whole Zionism long before Herzl existed. In fact, Herzl said, if I knew this book was already written, I wouldn't have written my book. But this guy had bad luck, and he wrote the book, and nobody paid attention to it. It was in 1862. And so only historians, you know, look at that sort of thing today. He knew Samson Raphael Hirsch was interesting. It's actually a very interesting book in a certain way. If you get past the 19th century German stiff, Hegelian, crazy philosophical talk. Other than that, it's quite interesting. Especially the pathetic part. Because you see, it's possible for a person, like we see today, who wants to return to Yiddishkeit, and sometimes the circumstances of his life don't allow it. I've known people like that. So you're married to your family, your friends, this and that and the other, or you've burned too many bridges. The same way you sometimes see somebody is from, I think I told you, I knew a guy who was a dying in a lot of basements. And he had a case, he told me, and he was called, in a modern guy, but a big buck in Chosh Mishpah, and it was about a Belzer Chassid. In some case, I don't know the details of which, in the course of which they discovered this Belzer Chassid was, you know, doing all kind of bad things in Times Square, let's put it that way. And they donned the case. I think I told you this. They finished the case and they issued their verdict. And afterwards they said to him, "What's Tutzach Medak, you know? How can a guy like you be involved in these kind of situations, immoral situations?" And he was very frank about it. He says, I'm 30-some years old. I'm married, I have a children. I don't believe in God or any stuff anymore, but I'm too stuck. I ain't going anywhere. So I live a double life. So that's when you're talking about from to not from. And sometimes it could be, and again, me, myself, and I've known people like this. Because of who they marry, because of the situation they got themselves in, or the rest of it, even if in midlife they have a crisis and they realize, I want to come back to Judaism, they can't do it all the way. Their children, let's say, for example, are not Jewish. It's you know, and they're living in the wrong place. I mean, anything's possible, and radical things do happen. That is true. I won't deny it. But very often, you're stuck in the sands of the quicksands of the swamp of life. So that's why here's a guy who clearly wanted to come back to Yiddishkeit in some way, but he could only do it in kind of a nationalistic way. He started talking about building a state of Israel, a Jewish state, 1862. And he has a phrase of it. I didn't look through the whole thing today. I'll tell you again, I was in the doctor's office half the day, but I flipped through it. Haven't looked at this in many, many years. It's interesting. It was written in German. It was translated in 1918 by Meir Waxman, the guy that wrote that six-volume history of Jewish literature in Skokie, you know, over there in the yeshiva in Skokie. He's an interesting character himself. But anyways, he translated from the German, which, by the way, a very nice little philosophical introduction, if you're interested in 19th century philosophy and all that stuff, which went through one phase after another in Germany. My goodness, the Hegelianism broke into right-wing Hegelianism, left-wing Hegelianism, and Feuerbacher, and Schleiermacher, and all these other guys, all of whom are consigned, as they say, to the dustbin of history. So meanwhile, he wrote something which reminded me of something I've said long ago that I read in the Sari Hamea from Rabbi Maimon. That's a 6-volume work. I'm sure it must be out of print. But it wasn't when I was young. Rabbi Maimon was one of the founders of Mizrahi. The Briskers hate him because the Brisker Rav cussed him out when he went to make a Sanhedrin in Israel, and he cussed out the Brisker Rav, and how dare you cuss me out? And he said, well, why'd you cuss me out? You know, I don't know all the details. These guys like Dovi Safir and the others, Remy Dell specialize in all the details of the current scandals. I'm serious. You can find out, probably. I mean it, and I'm going to be funny. All the details of how it happened. But Derech Agav, by Maimon, in the 40s, I think, maybe the 50s, he lived long. And he was a good friend of Ben-Gurion, by the way. If you ever see a picture of signing Declaration of Independence in Israel, he's sitting there with Ben-Gurion right next to each other. Anyway, so he wrote this book, basically, Tales of Gedolim, Hasidic and non-Hasidic and so on and so forth. Because he was both. He was like Romanian, so he's part, had Hasidic sympathies and Litvish sympathies. And he was a super Hasid of Rav Kook, naturally being who he was. But not only. And he himself has an interesting biography. And anyway, he wrote all this up in 6 volumes. Everybody knows, not all this, as the expression goes, the stories happen to the people happened. Lav dafka, that the story happened to the person. But sometimes they did. And when he gets autobiographical and talks about his travels through Europe, so a lot of stories are true. Some are not. And that's true in anything. Except, of course, Art Scroll, where everything is totally, absolutely true all the time. Anyway, so this is the old days of early Zionism and the isms, which Agudah later picked up. That is, you travel around propagating for your cause. You went from one town to another, one Medina to another, speaking on behalf of Zionism or against Zionism, whatever the case was. Socialism, and he was in favor of Mizrahi, you know, religious Zionism. And he says, at one point in his life, he was in Lithuania. This would be late 1890s, around 1900, Berg, something like that. And forget all the details, because he writes very lengthy, but his Hebrew is very easy to understand. They should really translate this. That would be interesting. But since he's the Mizrahi and they fight with Brisk, the Art Scroll would never do it, you know. And the Kippah Struga world hasn't produced their own Art Scroll. Anyway, so he says that, I think it was in Vilna, because he wanted to see the original copy of Beer grow for some reason or another. He's a big fan of Vilna Gaon, who he emphasizes his Zionistic side, because the world wanted to move there to Israel, as you know. And he had some eye trouble. He always had thick glasses. And they said that the best eye doctor is in Shavuot. My father, as I told you many times later, lived in Shavuot. Not in this time. It's like 1900, for goodness sake. My father was born in 1900. And Shavuot, like a lot of these cities in Lithuania, were destroyed in First World War and had to be reconstituted after First World War. Many people don't know that. But now you do. They were flattened almost. Then they rebuilt. The original inhabitants came back, non-original inhabitants came back, and so on and so forth. So, he said, go to, Rabbi Yashua is from there, you know. So, he goes to Shavuot to see the eye doctor, and because he knew how to learn, is considered, and anyway, he was always farm and all this kind of stuff. He had a big library. That's the most Rav Kook library. And he says, I'm going to pay a visit to the local Rav, who was the world famous Yosef Zacharias Stern. I'm sure I did him in the past. Right? Yosef Zacharias Stern, who was a Rav Shabbal, who's supposed to be the famous Bucky, you know, the encyclopedic knowledge. I mean, what am I thinking of? Photographic memory. And I'll let you read, and remember, this is the period of the Chov of Eitz Zion. It's actually, I guess we're talking about before, even before Herzl. Because Herzl switched it from the Chov of Eitz Zion to the Zionist movement. It, you know, made it more concrete. But it used to be called Chov of Eitz Zion. And as you know, 1880s, 1890s, it's a big controversy in Lithuanian world. Should be in favor of the Chov of Eitz Zion or not? They have non-front people over there. It became a question of, are you privileging Avos Yisrael over Frumkeit? Or do you say, like Samson Rav Hirsch, Halonu Atol Yitzarenu, you know, if you're not from, then we can't be one organization. These are the two sides. Some of the big rabbis, like the Netziv and Yitzchak Elchanan, were members of Chov of Eitz Zion, but then the Charedim said they had to do it for because of the powerful Baal Badim, but Leilo Nichale. And the others say it's not true. And so on and so on. These are the fights of 100 years ago. Anyway, so I want to read you the passage that he says over here. That Mirov Avadasi Bekriyat Siv Marech Zapiska, since I was working very hard and publishing some Hebrew newspaper, his Chalt Lagash Kevanayan, I started to have eye trouble. But Kevel Chazak, and it got really bad. Atshe Makor Yatzel and Soli Yoshabel Asmucha, until I was advised by a friend of mine to go to this town called Shabel, Kishamar Rofe Mumchalinayan, because there they have a big eye doctor. Shlokum, the number one doctor, Becholita. Hichlati Lamazet, so I decided to do it. Lorakade Lavakas Rofe, not only see the doctor over at Sisi Lagavurcha, it's Penei, Lakabas Penei, Rabbi Shal Shabel, I want to pay a visit and visit one to one the Rav in Shabel, who was an old man, Agon Yosef Zachariah Stern, Sharm Rolov Shaliba Hoyamali Ahado, Chibatzim. Mot Gezak, I think he's a big, he favors Libo Moliavo. You know, of course he might be exaggerating, but who knows? For the Chibat Zion movement, Chov Eitz Zion. Rav Gaon Zeho Yachid Bedoro, Bakamadur Sofon of Achrov. He was unusual, but Bikiusu Haneflo, Batur Shabik Sabatur Shabapet, Rishon and Machronin, Haimam Shofer Kolosi Shabatora, Yoda Balpet, Kolchosev Yosef Shabatanach, Shemadabra Divri Torah, Chor is Maternal Levim Maksuvim, Misham Lababli Yushalmi, Laposka Mishan Bachronin, but Mahiris of Bibzizas. So we've known those types, right? So you can immediately, you know, Vandrich is all over the place because he was such a gone. Kishabasi, Lashabal Halkabak wrote, I came to visit him, you know, because that's what he used to do. You visit a town, you pay a respect call on the Rav, and, you know, you have a hopefully something of a polite and learning conversation. Maybe obviously a little tea, maybe not. I saw a great story yesterday, was it? Somewhere. Rav Chaim Brisker, this is what I read, visited the Chofetz Chaim on Pesach one time, and the Chofetz Chaim was mechabed him by giving him zilch, zero, not even a cup of tea, because he knew Rav Chaim Brisker with all the chumras, and the best way to keep him mechabed was not offer him anything. But anyway, in this case, I went to visit him. Shalani Altechen Lomi asked me, where am I learning? Mani Lomin, what am I learning? The Aziz from Krobim Yosef Libi. What are my favorites for him? I think that's a very interesting mahalik, don't you? You meet somebody, they say, which are your favorites from? You can tell a lot from a person from that. And I said, I'm a big fan of the Rambam, and so on and so forth. And he started going through all the Rambams, he said. And a lot of these mafarshim that try to find out a makor for a Rambam, they don't know where it is, and he knew where it was, and all that sort of thing. He spoke so fast, covered so much ground, I couldn't follow it. Right? When he stopped for a minute, he asked upon him, I had to ask upon him,
Shomati Shikvod Rosa Karvla Tunas Chov Eitz Zion Ayim Em Sadover.
I heard that your carved Lechov Beit Sion, you won Lechov Beit Sion, which was the proto-Zionist movement at that time. Lechov Beit Sion. Maimon writes, Chalil Amri Tovzis. He immediately said, Chalil. Ani Lechov Beit Sion, ani Ohev Sion. So what's the difference in Lechov and Ohev? His Techaltipon Betimon. I looked at him astonished. I know what he meant. And he continued, Yesh Hevdol Godol. Now remember, this is a guy, he's like a walking Malbim, get what I'm saying? You know, it's Torah Shabbat Peh, Torah Shabbat Ksav, the poetry, everything. He really did. So he knew the Hebrew language, not from a scientific study of Hebrew language. He just knew every sefer that was ever published. Okay? So, with that knowledge, he said there's a difference between Chovev and Ohev, Chibah L'Abba. Hine L'Moshel, Kosev B'Torah, Av Chovev Amin, it says about the Rebbeinu Shlom, he likes the Goyim. Av Chovev Amin. HaGadosh Baruch Hu, Chovev is Amin. Ach lo Ohev Osam, but don't say he's Ohev them, he says Chovev them. U'kineged zeh, anach nirom b'nogei l'Yisrael, when it comes to Klal Yisrael, Abarucha Rabbam Yisrael b'ahava. Don't say Abarucha Rabbam Yisrael b'chiba. Okay? And it says Ohev Amo Yisrael, not Chovev. You see why? And he's saying this real fast. There's a big difference between Ava and Chiba. So now we're getting into Shemus Nerdofim. Yachal Odom, L'chaviv is Chavir. This is all, according to him, Yosef Stern talking. Yachal Ish L'chaviv is Chavir. A person can be M'chaviv, another guy. But since nobody is without faults, L'fikach L'chaviv Rakes Maloso. So when I am chovev you, I like your milas. Below is chesronoso. I don't like chesronos. So in other words, now this is me talking. If I like you, it means I know you have pluses and minuses, but your pluses, in my opinion, outweigh the minuses. And if I like you, right? I respond to that with the emotion of like. I know you have weird looking shoes. I know you do this funny, that funny. But on the other hand, you have this plus and that plus and that plus and that plus. Therefore, we have a relationship of chiva. Not that I like the chesronos, I'm willing to overlook them. Aval ava, he said, nikra misha oiv is chaverim kol chesronos abo. Ava means you like the other person, including the chesronos. You like them as they are. But gam in paga bechoros labra, and even if the other guy does something wrong to you, in opposing malevaso, I still like you. I'm owe of you because my like wasn't based on whether you have pluses or minuses. If you're supposed to be mivarech on misfortune as much of a good fortune, you have to cultivate that mitzvah, which is not so easy. You see, you owe of you, love Hashem, even the bad stuff he does to you. I'll say it again. That's easier said than done. And it says, "V'haftarecha kamocha." That's a toughie, right? Tzarech Adam Yisrael le'ov es chaveru kamo shuv es atzmon. V'haftarecha kamocha. You have to love your fellow man like you love yourself. I love myself, even though I know chesron is. You see what I'm saying? Haridam lo'ig chesron v'chom bo v'atzmon. Therefore, kamocha, and so on and so forth. Kach tev es chaverecha in kol chesron oso. Therefore, you have to like the other guy with all the chesron is. So I'm an Ohev Tzion, and I even like the Chovei Tzion, the proto-Zionists, even though I know they're better Chesronos. Doesn't mean you like the Chesronos, but you say, I like you in spite of the Chesronos. I said that wrong. With the Chesronos. Shalti Oso Shub, I asked him, Hinei Rav Gadol Ploni, Ohev Tzion, what do you do with the fact that there's other big Gadol here in Lithuania? It was not an Ohev Tzion. So he answers mitoch pesis immediately. Rav ze ulai hu gadol b'Torah, aval eino Ohev Yisrael, hu chovev Yisrael. This gadol you're talking about is a gadol in the sense that he's a Talmud Chacham, but he's not Ohev Yisrael. He's a chovev Yisrael. Chovev v'seil Yehudim shalafi daita him yireim chamin kamahu. He likes the Jews who are from like he is. I'll love with kol Yisrael, but to love every Jew because he's a Jew. L'kachi in the mesugol. Right? And he went through old Tanakh, and this and that and the other, bringing one rye after another, and whole shas, bringing one rye after another. I may have said this story before. It doesn't matter. It bears repeating. If I didn't say it, then definitely it's interesting. There's Ava and there's Chiba. This is a good speech, by the way, for Shavu Brachas. So when a couple gets married, right away, it's Chiba still. Then, you know, the plus is outweighed the minuses. But hopefully, over the course of time, it'll turn into Ava. Why am I bringing this up? I'm looking at Moses Hess, who's a contemporary of Yosef Zachary Stern. Completely opposite in terms of this guy was an atheist and a communist and socialist and this and the other. But what he returned to was obviously his role. Okay? And in one of the parts that I just flipped open at the doctor's office, just for the heck of it, I see he writes in a form like Hirsch, you know, different letters. First letter, second letter, third letter. That was popular form. And he's writing some interlocutor in some imaginary interlocutor, trying to defend his newly found love for the return and love to the Jewish people. So, you know, the Germans can go the German way, and the French can go the French way, and the English can go the English way. I'm a Jew. I want the Jews to go the Jewish way. But he says, in this 1860s, the height of rationalism, he'll say, you come and ask me to come. This is Moses Hess talking in the translation from the German. You ask me to come back to earth from the starry regions of philosophy to the soil of Palestine, to the soil of Israel. You love the antithesis. As an offset to the noble and exalted religion of my regenerated Judaism, because he projected a Judaism to be modern and relevant and all the rest of it, you oppose the bloody sacrificial cult of the ancient Israelites. Now, that's how you justify Karbonis, which is a bloody sacrificial cult. This is for now we're learning Vayikra. And you claim that the Orthodox Jews will never agree to rebuilding the temple without at the same time reinstituting this ancient sacrificial cult. You assume, therefore, that my love for my people will not go so far as to consent to introduction of the sacrificial cult. Isn't that interesting? And again, he's writing this to, you know, literary interlocutors, people within Shaykhis, trying to make the case, you know, for regeneration, the revival of Judaism, especially in an Eretz Israel, in the Jewish land. And he says, the author, I cannot grant you, however, either the supposed conditio sine qua non on the part of the Orthodox Jews or your hypothetical conception of the degree of my patriotism. In other words, you're assuming I can't be in favor of restoration of Eretz Yisrael and a base mikdash, all the rest of it, if it includes something as disgusting as Karbonis. He says, let me tell you something. And listen to this. In regard to my deep, reawakened, though belated love for my people, I repeat, in reply to my deep, reawakened, though belated, because he really re-entered the Jewish people mentally at the age of 50, 1862. So, in regard to my deep, reawakened, belated, though belated love for my people, it seems to me that you forget that real, strong love, the love which dominates body and spirit alike, is always blind. Its blindness consists in this, that it is not the perfection and the excellent qualities of the beloved, which are the object of love's desire, but the beloved being as it is, with all its good and bad traits. That's the same thing as Yosef Zachary Stern said. Love desires not the object of its affection because it hopes to improve upon its bad traits, but because it loves the undivided individual entity. The scar on the face of my beloved does not detract from my love for her, but is itself dear to me, dearer perhaps than her beautiful eyes, for other women have beautiful eyes too. But the scar is characteristic only of my beloved's individuality. Were really the sacrificial cult an inseparable part of Jewish nationality, I would unhesitatingly accept it. But as long as I've not learned anything better, I'm convinced to the contrary. So you see what he said? He said, I love Judaism. I've rediscovered a love, he said, in my middle years for Judaism. And if I were to be convinced, which I'm not, but he said, if I were to be convinced that Judaism and the fulfillment of Judaism and the restoration of Jewish people to their own state and all the benefits from the human race that would result from that, because that's a big thesis of his, right? Even you and I would say that from a secular point of view. To use simple language, if Israel didn't have to worry about all this attack junk, the Hamas, the Arabs, all the rest of it, they would have found a cure for cancer by now. That's the language you use in simple terms, right? I think it's true, by the way, right? Everybody would be better off, but they don't want to do it. So Moses has, Moshe has a few for, he's saying, listen, and remember, this is a guy who's married to a guy. He married a prostitute when he was young as a communist protest against the mistreatment of women or something like that, like in 1830s. I mean, you know, the guy jumped in with both feet, as so many young Jews did that time, looking for an ideal for religion, if I can use that term, for which they wanted to believe, since they had given up on the old Jewish religion. They thought about the whole mankind being a religion. He early on discovered Hamari Mooney. You know what I mean? That I was deceived. There's no such thing as religion for all mankind, and everybody always be out against the Jews. We have to first cultivate our own garden. Although, as I said before, as a socialist, and I mean this seriously, as an idealistic socialist, he believed, as I just said before, leave the Jews alone, let them have Eretz Yisrael, let them build up whatever they want over there, and the whole human race will benefit as a result of it. Right? Like I said, they'll find a cure for cancer, they'll find a cure for this, they'll have new inventions and all the rest of it. You know, he doesn't use the language of Talmudic spirituality because he was divorced from that. But he had, deep inside, a Jewish roots. He wasn't like Nadav HaNavi trying to bring an Esh Zara inside. It's almost the opposite. He had the original Esh, he just has suppressed it for so long. And what is he saying over here? This is remarkable. I'll say it again. From somebody, he's one of the Avi Avosov of atheistic communism. Although he never was exactly an atheist, the way Karl Marx was. Then Machluksen and all this. You don't need to know this. You don't have to be historians of communistic attitudes towards religion. That's a separate schmooze. But I thought that passage so interesting. I love my beloved because of who the beloved is. And I'm sure he didn't mind his own wife, who was a Catholic, who originally came from a prostitute background. But they were married for 50 years or whatever. He said, what kind of do I like her? I love her. I love her. She loves me. Such is love. The same way, in the screwball fashion, the same way I've discovered late in life, I love my people. I like the Jewish religion. And if that means that you restore the Jews to Eretz Yisrael, and if that means that they have to rebuild a temple as was once upon a time, and if that means they have to do Korban Pesach and squeeze the oil against the altar and burn the chalev on the, you know, on the Mizbech and all the rest of it, with the laws of Noser, if that's what it means, then I like it. He says, you know, as a person living in 1862, I don't think that's what it means. But if it is, I'll take it. Because if you love somebody, love is blind. Right? That is what we call obvious Israel. We don't have enough of this. Especially now, with all the fights going to happen now, with the drafting yeshiva boys and all the rest of it. I'm sure we'll see all the bitterness come out. Whenever these kind of arguments, it brings out the worst in the non-from, and it brings out the worst in the from. I'll say it again. When we have these kind of fights, it brings out the worst in the chilonim, but it also brings out the worst in the charedim. You know, it brings out the worst now, not the best. You'll see people say things about Israel, and Zionism, the state shouldn't be there, and Jews should all go into God. I mean, I don't know, it's already starting. But as he said himself before, that's chovev Yisrael. If you're oev Yisrael, you like them with all the faults. Obviously, everybody would like Israel to get from tomorrow. I understand that. But even though they're not, you still want them to win. You still want them to prosper. Hoping, like this guy just said, you know, it'll get better. But if you say, I only like you if you support me and do this, that, and the other. Otherwise, I hate you. Take off kaparis. I thought that's just something I could say. That's a mind association I made at the doctor's office today. It's a very interesting book. I can't say I recommend it exactly because, first of all, you'll never see it. I've probably never been reprinted. Maybe it has, I don't know. Second of all, there's a lot of references to contemporary German philosophers at that time. Bauer and Hegel and all these other guys. Many of whom belong under the garbage heap of history. But the pathetic, not the bathetic, but the pathetic spectacle of a person in midlife having been burned by the geisha masses for whose behalf he was laboring, coming back to his people, or at least trying to, and say, I love you, even the parts that don't make any sense to me, right? That is really something quite remarkable. We need more of that. Anyway, as I said before, I thank Mishpacha Stavansky for sponsoring this chance for me to babble a little bit on these subjects, which are contemporary relevance and timeless relevance. And with that, I wish you a good week.